Everyone's talking about AI these days, right? This season on Compiler, we're diving deep into how AI is reshaping the world we live in. Join us for a new season of Compiler, an original podcast from Red Hat. Subscribe now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Here we go. You ready?
Here we go.
How do you feel?
I'm ready. You know, hand me a microphone. No one asked for my opinion, but they're going to get it. They're going to get it.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to And Just Like Her, Sex and the City podcast. I'm your host, Tara Llewellyn. Last week, we were joined by Haley Call to discuss how powerful physical beauty is. And this week, we're joined by one of my nearest and dearest friends, Kayla Murphy, to discuss if there is still a cold war between marrieds and singles. Hi, Kayla.
Hi.
Welcome.
Oh my gosh, talking about dearest.
Yes, crazy. We've been talking about it for so long.
Yes.
I mean, not so nearest anymore. You don't live in the Northeast anymore. You now live in the Midwest.
Which, talk about a culture shock. No, I'm kidding. I do love the Midwest, but I do get, every time I come into New York again, or I get the little twinge of like...
I know, missing out. I know that our listeners at home are just meeting you now for the first time.
So sorry, guys. You're stuck with me.
But I've obviously known you for many years.
Yes.
You and I grew up in the same town.
Yes.
And went to school at the same college, which was very close to New York. Being so close to New York for high school and college was like, this just felt like second nature being here.
Yeah. Always thought that I was going to move to New York. That was kind of always the plan.
Yeah.
And then I got conned. I met a boy from St. Louis, Missouri, and was supposed to be casual. And here I am 4.5 years later.
Yes.
And now I live in Missouri. So the joke's on me.
Yeah, it really is. It's true.
But I feel very fortunate that a lot of my family is still in Connecticut. A lot of my friends are still in New York. So I come in a couple times a year and spend a couple days. And it's a great situation because I get to stay in all my friends' New York apartments and not pay New York rent.
That's so true. That is true.
Cheers, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say. So tell me about your relationship with Sex and the City. Do you remember when you first started watching the show?
Yes. Vividly.
Okay. When was that?
It was one of my mom's favorite shows.
Oh, love.
And she, right after my parents got divorced, when I was in middle school, started trauma dump on you guys this early. when they got divorced, my mom did a Sex and the City rewatch. She hadn't watched it in a long time. And she would just have it on in the living room. And I was in like eighth grade. I was probably way too young to be watching Sex and the City.
Yeah.
But I was born 35, so my mom was just like, eh, whatever. She probably already knows these things. And she was painting. I don't know why I remember it so vividly, but she was painting a wall in our living room, this like beautiful like coastal blue color. Mm. And she painted that wall when she was on the Aiden episodes. So for years, she called the wall Aiden Blue. Like, she didn't know the name of the paint color. It was just Aiden Blue because she painted it during the Aiden years. So
I love that.
That was my first real taste of Sex and the City. And then when I was a freshman in college, or maybe a senior in high school, one of my mom's good friends, Rebecca, who is my mom, Samantha, like to a T, Rebecca had this pink velvet DVD box set of Sex and the City, and she lent it to me, and I watched it all. And then I actually, weirdly, that we're recording this today, not today specifically, but around this time, is that it just came up on my Facebook memories that 10 years ago, I met Sarah Jessica Parker.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
It was like 10 years almost to the week.
We were talking about this because I just celebrated, as we record this, it's my 10-year anniversary of being in New York. And that's so funny that at the same time, you met Sarah Jessica Parker. Wow.
No, I don't mean to say that I met Sarah Jessica Parker in any kind of cool way. I did not. I stalked her at the stage door of the Broadway show she was doing. And
what was she doing?
She was doing Commons of Pensacola with Blythe Danner.
Oh, wow. I don't even remember that happening.
I think it's called Comments of Pensacola is in the title. I think it's Comments of Pensacola.
Yeah.
And Blythe Danner played her mom. And it was like a snowy, sleety, disgusting New York night. And I was like, well, we might as well just wait at the stage door. And nobody else was waiting because the weather was disgusting.
Sure.
And I was like, if she doesn't come out or she goes out a different door or she whatever, like, who cares? We're just standing here. And she came out and it was like just me and my mom and maybe one or two other people. And she was so sweet. She took selfies with us. She chatted with us. Like, my mom has worshipped her forever.
Yeah.
And so my mom was like beside herself, so excited. So she was very, very sweet. She is a Polly Pocket of a person.
Well, yes, I actually know that because I have a Sarah Jessica Parker story.
I love this.
It was early 2018. I had just gone through a hard breakup.
Yeah.
And I remember I was standing outside of my bar class. It was on West 8th Street.
Yeah.
I was talking to my mom and telling her just how miserable I felt. You know, after you go through a breakup, you just feel like the world feels so heavy. Everything you do feels just like impossible to move through. You're like moving through sludge. And I remember just like kind of like having a little bit of a meltdown with her on the phone. And I look up and I just see Sarah Jessica Parker walk
ethereal
by me,
goddess.
Literally come out of the abyss. And she looked at me and smiled and just kept walking. And I, like, my mom was talking on the other end of the phone. I was just like mouth agape.
Yeah.
Just like, I was like, Mom, Carrie Bradshaw just walked by me. Everything's going to be fine.
I'm fine. Actually, I don't even remember that guy's name. I'm fine.
Exactly, exactly. So that was my Sarah Jessica Parker story. I did not talk to her, but she gave me, like, I could tell she saw me, and I think she could tell that I was going through it. And so she just gave me kind of a smile of like, everything's going to be okay.
Oh my God, angel.
Literal angel.
I love her.
I know, I do too. Anyways. Anyway, so you've loved Sex and the City from such a young age.
Yes, probably inappropriately young to be watching Sex and the City.
So you're nearing your 30s.
Yes.
And how has your relationship with Sex and the City changed as you've neared your 30s?
It's interesting because, like I said a little bit earlier, I always kind of pictured myself moving to New York. And also my parents, again, not to trauma dump, my parents had a pretty tumultuous divorce. And so for a long time, I didn't know if I was ever going to want to get married. I didn't know if I was ever going to want to have kids. So when I was watching Sex and the City, I was like, oh my God, I would love that life. I would love an apartment in New York with just my friends and like dating. And like, I don't want to get married. I don't want to have kids. Like, her life, I'm like, that's what I want.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, if you make plans, God will laugh. And so that's not the way my life has played out, in a very positive and beautiful way.
Yeah.
But it does, Carrie's life and the life of the Sex and the City characters, minus their infinite budget. That's kind of the little bit of like glimmer of, oh, maybe that would have been me, you know, if I had done it. And it's, life just takes different paths. And I love my, I have a beautiful life in St. Louis and in ways that I never expected that I would ever have. I think I ended up with a much more traditional path than I ever thought for myself.
Yeah.
So it's kind of just, it's funny for me when I watch it because I'm like, that's like the life, I wanted that life so bad.
Yeah.
And I still feel like I had it. Don't get me wrong. Like, I had a pretty crazy New York early 20s.
Yes, totally.
it's different as I'm getting toward 30. And I remember a conversation, you know, Charlotte always kind of saying she wants babies. She wants to get married. She wants to have babies. And I was like, she's so young. Like, she's, I don't understand. I still feel that way. I hear my friends talking like, when am I going to get married? When am I going to have babies? When am I going to whatever? And I'm like, you're so young.
Yeah, totally.
And I kind of thought maybe as I got closer to 30s, I would understand that mentality more of,
sure,
if you know you want to be a parent and all of those things, then you feel like you're operating in this timeline. But as I'm approaching 30s, I'm like, no, if I had a baby right now, I'd be a teen mom.
Correct. Like, I feel that way. I'm 32.
Yeah. Like, I'm a teen mom. Yeah. Like, what do you mean?
That's how I feel right now. Yeah. Taking care of Luna. My cat.
Literally my son,
yes.
Ollie.
Yes. You have a son.
I do.
And you are, you are a teen mom.
Yeah. I birthed him. And I was so young. Like, but yeah, it's interesting kind of the dynamics and how I feel about the show as I've gotten. I love it as much as I ever did.
I know you do.
But yeah, it definitely takes on a different shape.
Yeah, different meaning.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I actually want to talk about that more when we get into the conversation. Because I just think that you having this journey of really yearning for that life that Carrie has.
Yeah.
And then kind of taking a more traditional path is kind of perfect for the episode we're about to talk about.
Yeah.
So as I've explained to our listeners and also to you, we're going to do a quickie. 10 minutes or less, get into the episode, kind of get through it, just make sure our friends at home know what we're talking about, and then we'll actually get into the nitty-gritty of the question, other questions that are posed in the episode.
Sounds good.
All right. So this is season one, episode three, Bay of Married Pigs. The description is, Carrie is flashed by a married man in the Hamptons while Miranda's law firm suspects her of being a lesbian.
I want to unpack that. That's what I'm hoping to unpack.
We're definitely going to unpack. So the episode opens with Carrie in the Hamptons. She's with her friend Patience. Hilarious that she's named Patience. And Peter. You know, she's there as the single friend.
Yeah.
The next morning, Carrie gets flashed basically by this man, which is so bizarre to me. Peter, what are you doing?
It's one of those things when you watch 90s TV shows, like there's things in Friends, there's things in all shows from this time period that haven't aged particularly well.
Yeah.
And no, like this is like sexual assault.
Correct.
Like, correct. Correct. The, like, I was like, that would never be on a show now.
No.
No, standing naked in the hallway. Like, yeah, that would never happen in
the
episode.
He's no shame
now
whatsoever. He's just drinking his coffee and he's just like, hey, what's up? And then like later when he recounts it to his wife, he's like, oh yeah, she caught me on my way to the bathroom. What? No, she didn't.
Why were you walking to the bathroom of your house naked, my
naked
guy?
You have a guest. I would be like extra clothed if I had a guest. What the fuck? Anyway, so she's telling her friends about it. What I love about these early episodes, and I'm excited to see how it goes as we move into the series, situation happens at the top of the episode. Like they hit us with it really quick.
Always.
And then the next scene is the four of them dissecting it, right?
Yes.
So we get into this conversation, which, you know, we can unpack a little later on, where Carrie's telling them what happens, and they get into this conversation about married people versus single people because of the reaction that Patience has to her husband basically standing naked in the hallway with Carrie there. Because she pushes Carrie out and she's like, you wouldn't understand, you're single. If any of my married friends ever said that to me, I would be like, excuse me?
Yeah.
Watch your tone. But I love this conversation that they're having. They're kind of poking fun at it. They have the pepper mill.
A very funny bit.
It's gorgeous. But it opens up this conversation that leads to these vignettes, because we're still breaking the fourth wall on this show, where a bunch of different people are kind of sharing their experiences.
Yeah.
This one woman being like, of course I got married. I didn't want to stay young and adolescent for the rest of my life.
Sad and lonely and single.
Oh my God. The stereotypes they lean into are so funny.
Yeah.
But then you've got other perspectives that are like, yeah, I, you know, used to have a friend and we used to do everything together. And now that time is no longer ours, you know?
Yeah.
And then this other woman saying like, people who get married, they turn into we's, which not no.
Not no. That's one of the ones that I'll get into my feelings on all the stereotypes they kind of delve into. But that is one that I am like, kind of.
Yeah, not no. But also, you know, I think that there's a lot that has changed since 1998.
Yes.
And we'll get into it. So the question is posed, is there a cold war between marrieds and singles? And it cuts to these vignettes and then to Stanford and Carrie having this conversation where Stanford says, absolutely. It's a battle, because he's also feeling it as a member of the gay community. And
yes,
they run into this gay couple where Carrie then feels like she's like single bashed in a very different way, because they ask her to be an egg donor simply because she's not married. And that never comes back around. It's so weird. It's like a drive-by.
Something that's interesting, and it happens more, I think, in earlier episodes of the show than in later seasons, but we see Carrie often introduce people to us and say, my good friends, my favorite couple.
My favorite couple.
We never see these fucking people again.
Ever.
And it's interesting because we know that the entire premise of the show is female friendship and,
yes,
and all of that. And the three friends that she's the closest to, we see every single episode all the time. But then she'll introduce us to these random people.
Randos.
And be like, my favorite couple to hang out with. And then I'm like, well, you don't see them again for 7 years. Like, does that not?
No, I wrote that down later. My favorite couple, David and Lisa. Who?
And the couple that she stays with in the Hamptons, Patience and Peter, she goes and stays in their Hamptons house. Just the three of them. They must be somewhat close. And then we never hear about them again.
And I think that was a testament to the original, you know, Carrie Bradshaw, Candace Bushnell, she had so many people in her life that she was incorporating into these conversations. So I think that at first they were really trying to lean into that. But as you know, with a TV show, you can't introduce that many characters and keep
expect
them,
people to keep track.
Yeah, you can't keep them steadily there, which is why the staples of like, you know, Carrie, Miranda, Samantha, and Charlotte, and then Stanford, like they stay pretty constant throughout the entire series. And I'm glad, because with Stanford, he offers that perspective from the gay community, because he's like,
it's not just like a fight between heterosexual women.
Exactly.
Like it affects all fronts.
Exactly. So they have this conversation, and then we cut to Miranda at her softball game for her law firm, where she is set up with a woman named Sid.
Yes. It's obvious that this conversation, it was poking fun at, I think, a lot of stereotypes that existed at the time of, like, lesbian women play softball, lesbian women have short hair, like, well, she's not single, she doesn't have, or she is single, she doesn't have a boyfriend, she must be gay. Like, I think those are obviously not true and very outdated stereotypes of lesbian women. And I think at the time, the episode probably thought it hit the nail on the head. Like, Miranda does have short hair. She does like softball. Like, she must be gay.
Yeah.
And then I think it kind of has taken on a new life with the reboot, where they are obviously choosing to have Miranda explore her sexuality more. And that's, this sounds controversial because I'm saying that I hate it, but I don't hate that they made her character go down this route. What I mean by I hate it is it kind of verifies the stereotypes that are in this episode.
Sure.
Of people thinking that she was lesbian because she did all these things, and then later in life, like, you know what I mean? It,
totally.
It kind of makes it feel like it's like validating the earlier episode of like, well, everybody knew, you know?
Yeah,
like,
totally. Totally.
I'm like, well, no, it's still an outdated and...
It is. It leaned into an outdated stereotype, which happens a lot on the show, especially in these early episodes.
Yes.
But I think that's because they were trying to lean into those intentionally.
Yes.
To prove a point.
Yeah, agreed.
So when Miranda does go and tell Carrie about this experience, you know, she shares with her that she is going to lean into this stereotype.
Well, yeah. So at the end of the softball game, the partner at Miranda's law firm invites Miranda and Sid to dinner at his house because now they're, in theory, a couple.
Yeah.
And Miranda is like, he's never been this friendly with me. Is it because now, like, I'm in a couple? Like, he can invite me to a couple's dinner party. So that's why she decides to lean in, because it seems like a career advancement opportunity.
Opportunity, yeah.
Yeah.
It prompts Carrie to really think about, like, is the Cold War not necessarily about married people versus single people, but married people trying to figure single people out?
Yes.
Which
is one of my favorite questions that's posed in the episode.
Yeah, definitely. And so she decides to, like we were talking about before, turn to her favorite couple, David and Lisa, who I actually liked. Like, I liked David and Lisa. I'm like, actually, bring them back.
No, they were a couple that I think she liked hanging out with them because they weren't the cheesy, making her feel small for being single couple.
Not at all.
Until they do the fix-up situation.
Totally.
And, yeah.
They do it in a different way. Like, she knows she's out with a couple, but she doesn't feel like she's a third wheel necessarily.
Yeah.
But they do lean into the stereotype a little bit by setting her up with this guy, Sean, who just happens to show up.
And happens to be the classic stereotype of, like, most husband material guy in the world. He's bought an apartment that he has room for a nursery. Like, my fiance is wonderful. I love him so much. I can't wait to marry him. He's a great husband material guy. He would never purchase a home and be like, and I was thinking this could be the nursery for the babies I don't have with the woman I haven't met. Like, that's crazy behavior. That's serial killer behavior.
But I do think that that's another stereotype they lean into.
Yes.
Is, like, someone who is so desperate. And I dated a guy, not exactly like this, but kind of like this, and we'll talk about it later. But yes. They are out there, but not necessarily like this.
No, this guy's, like, scary.
Yeah.
This guy's spooky.
A little bit. This guy is spooky.
Like, ooh.
But Carrie says she wants to just kind of try him on. She's like, I know it's not my style, but, like, it's here, so I'm going to try it on.
Sometimes it's nice to date someone who likes you more than you like them.
Yeah.
And I know that that sounds bad, but no. When you're feeling like you want to be dating and you want to be meeting people and it's not happening, it's not happening, it's not happening, I feel like that almost makes you more inclined to try someone on because they're interested in you. You like them enough. You're like, well, maybe I could really like them, you know?
Yeah, totally. No judgment there. So he ends up telling her that he's having this housewarming party for this apartment that he just bought. And it's the same night as Miranda going to this partner couple's dinner.
Yes.
And so they all end up going to their separate affairs. But Carrie brings Charlotte and Samantha with her, not anticipating this is going to be a party full of couples.
Yes. He says to bring her friends. And so she's like, okay, great. And they walk into a house of just everyone paired off.
Yeah. They call it Noah's Upper West Side rent controlled arc, which I thought was so funny.
Chef's kiss. So
chef's
funny.
Kiss. And, you know, a lot happens. Charlotte keeps whispering in Carrie's ear that this guy Sean is going to propose to her. And earlier, I forgot to mention this, but you kind of brought it up also. When the four of them are sitting there discussing what happened with Patience and Peter, Carrie makes a comment over voiceover that Charlotte treats marriage like a sorority she was desperately trying to pledge. And so I feel like that's why Charlotte is so fixated on this guy Sean and how he's going to propose to Carrie. And Carrie's like, I just started seeing this guy. He's not even my boyfriend. He's just someone I'm trying on, which is why they end up being seemingly perfect for each other, Charlotte and this guy Sean, by the end of the episode.
I wrote that down. I was like, why do we never see this guy again? That is, like, Charlotte, if you like him so much, you take him.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. That's kind of how I felt. And then when they do end up doing that, I was like, oh, this is kind of perfect.
And then they broke up over a China pattern.
They're still trying to figure Charlotte out. They're still trying to figure all of them out. But, like, I think she's the least fleshed out at this point.
I agree.
Because she's so marriage hungry that I think that they're trying to like figure out how to navigate that. And she remains true to who she is yes. throughout the rest of the series, but they're still trying to kind of give her the little nuances. But Peter and Patience have shown up to the party.
Yes.
And they're treating Carrie differently because she is a part of a couple.
Which these couples must all be connected. I was David gonna say, and Lisa, they must Patience and Peter,
all because know each other.
How would Patience and Peter end up at the housewarming party of David and Lisa's random friend they set Carrie up with?
Correct.
So apparently this is all interconnected.
Correct. So they end up leaving the party with the quote unquote Cold War still kind of in play because Patience knows that Carrie told her friends.
Oh, I would tell my friends.
But I would also 100% tell my friends.
I would not tell your friends. Happened. I would not tell my friends if I were at my friend's apartment and her boyfriend walked out and he was in his underwear or something and he didn't realize I was there. I'm not going to tell my friend and be like, oh, freak about it. If someone's husband walks out full frontal, sipping his coffee, looking at me, of course I'm telling my friends that girl's husband is a fucking weirdo.
1,000%. So we switch over to the partner party where Miranda's leaving. She clearly has the approval of her partner, boss, whoever this man is, Chip.
Yeah.
But she comes clean to him. She's like, look, I'm actually not part of a couple. I just used this as leverage to get invited to your party. And he's like, all right, interesting. My wife will be sad because she wanted to add a lesbian couple to our circle, which was very 1998 of them.
Yeah. Lesbians are really chic in 1998. We apparently, gotta add one to our group.
Apparently. So Charlotte takes Samantha home. This scene was so random and we didn't need it. Where she takes her home and Samantha ends up sleeping with the
doorman.
We didn't need this at all, but whatever. We cut back to Sean because he wants Carrie to stay over after the yeah. party's over. This man is so desperate. And he yeah. says it. He goes, you can smell my desperation. And he poses the question of like, I don't understand you women. I hate when men say you women.
If you're hanging out with the right men, they say it less and less these days. But
it's true. Yeah. It's true. But I hate hearing that on television or it's anything very like cringy. This. You women. What? All you say is, I want to get married. I want to get married. Like, I want to get married. And I have more to say on that when I kind of share my more story. To say. I do have more little to Easter say.
Egg. Little Easter egg. For.
But I have more to say on that when I talk about the guy that I dated who I felt was kind of similar to Sean.
Yeah.
Because I understand where he's coming from, that he's like, why can't I find someone when I feel like all I hear from other people is like, especially in 1998, like women want to get married. And he's like, I want to get married. But it has to be the right person. I just find it so interesting when people say, oh, I just want to be married, I think are the words that he uses.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I get that. I get yearning to find that partner, to find someone right. who's going to be next to you at all times. Like, sure. But I just feel like it takes on a different meaning when you are grasping at anybody who right. shows up, you know?
Yes.
And Carrie's a catch. Don't get me wrong. But it's like you literally then instantly move on to her best friend because she
is more interested in getting married than Carrie is.
Correct. Which, yeah that means that maybe your viewpoints, stances, etc., like your goals and dreams and hopes, whatever, align. And that's what you want in a partner, right?
But you have at the same shit time, taste at Williams-Sonoma.
Apparently so. That's why she was just out. But it ends up that Carrie kind of comes to this conclusion of like, I don't even know if there's a Cold War, but all I know is that like, you can't beat a night at the movies with your friends. And that is the episode.
And that's the Bay of Married Pigs.
Do you feel like she reached a conclusion by the end of it?
No. I feel more often than not that she doesn't reach a conclusion sometimes when she poses a question.
It's very true.
Carrie just vacillates back and forth for 25 minutes and then sometimes she answers it and sometimes she doesn't.
Sometimes she doesn't, but we're here to answer it because I do think that there's an answer, especially now 25 years later. I think that there is a more solid and concrete answer than there was in 1998. Yes. So agreed. Let's kind of unpack this. I think something I missed sharing with our audience, but you mentioned it earlier, is that you recently got engaged. And what's hilarious is when I asked you to do this episode with me, you were not engaged.
Yeah. So I got engaged only about a month ago. Everybody clapped. I'm just kidding. Everybody said congratulations. It's crazy. Again, as I mentioned earlier in the episode, that was not something that I
expected.
I mean, I expected it in this relationship in the way that we've been together for quite a few years, and I knew it was coming in this relationship. But I think when I was in high school and college, I was like, oh, I might never get married. That's fine. So I did recently get engaged. It is the least scary decision I've ever made. And I always thought that it would be
huge
and like scary. And I was a no-brainer.
Yeah, of course. Well, I think that part of that is because of the pressure that is put on women, especially to get married, and especially being a child of divorce.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of pressure in your mind building up to making that decision.
Well, I think my fiance's parents are still happily married. They've been married for 32 years. And I think when you grow up in not that kind of environment, you are afraid to repeat it.
Yes.
I didn't really grow up with a very healthy example of marriage and relationships.
Yeah.
And so I think I was scared to be like destined to repeat that.
Yeah.
And after spending a lot of time with my fiance's parents, the parents of some of my other friends and stuff like that, and seeing more healthy examples of marriage as I've gotten older, I'm like, oh, it is possible.
Yeah.
You know, if you work at it and you know, whatever it is possible to have. And I think because my worldview on it was just different.
No, it's very possible to have. But I think, you know, when we were growing up, especially, there was so much emphasis put on staying together, staying together, staying together. You had to stay together. And that was like a like healthy relationship. Yeah. Just because you stayed together, whether it was for the kids, whether it was for your like religious purposes, staying together was like the emphasis was put on that in our society, which I think also put the emphasis on getting married.
Yes.
At this time. And so I understand because admittedly, I did not grow up with the healthiest example of a marriage either in my parents.
Yeah.
I have also kind of always looked at marriage being like, what is this? And why are we all so like...
Wrapped up in staying together. Yes. And I also think social media exacerbates it a lot because I was saying to mom, I went through a breakup like a couple years ago when I got out of college and it was just horrible. And I always knew what he was doing because we were friends from college. So he's being tagged in stories. And even when I wasn't seeking out to know what he was doing, I was just being inundated with it.
Sure.
And I was talking to my mom about breakups and she was like, it is so much harder to break up now than it was then. She was like, because she was like, don't get me wrong, heartbreak has always existed and whatever, but she was like, it used to be that when you broke up with someone, you never saw them.
Yeah.
You didn't, unless you lived in the same direct neighborhood, you didn't see them and you didn't see what they were doing on social media and you weren't inundated with their location, their Snapchats, their whatever.
Who they're with, yeah.
Who they're with versus now, I mean, I think it's the same thing with divorce, like, now that everything is documented, it used to be that you could get divorced and no one knew you were divorced until your 10-year reunion, you know? Yeah,
but also if you notice that someone's posting with their spouse, partner all the time, and then all of a sudden they stop, or you see pictures of them without a ring on, you're like...
And then they archive the photos.
Yep. There's not a trace of their partner anywhere.
And we all do it. If you say you don't do that, you're lying. Like, mm-hmm. we all speculate. Couples from high school were like, oh my God, they stopped posting together. And it's because we're not meant to have that kind of access to every person we've ever met in our lives.
No.
It's a very unnatural, weird phenomenon that we're living in of like being inundated with the information of a girl I went to high school with 15 years ago who got married and moved to Colorado and now she's back and she's not wearing her ring. Why would I know that about her?
Yeah.
You know, like,
totally.
It's just an interesting way the dating scene has shifted.
But do you think because of that, because we're so exposed to relationships building up, potentially falling apart, like we're so exposed to the day to day of people's relationships that we've made it more acceptable to not be married until like your 30s? Because the thing is, I know so many people, and no judgment whatsoever, there were a lot of my friends or friends that I, like friends of friends who I know, who got married in their 20s and are already divorced.
Yeah.
So I have to say that I felt the pressure that Carrie is expressing and that these women are talking about, I felt more of that pressure in my 20s than I do now in my 30s.
Well, because now they're single again. We're all back.
We're all back.
Guys, we're back. No, I agree. I think that something that we talked a little bit about offline, but having been from this area and then moving to the Midwest, where many of my Midwestern friends are as progressive as anybody here, but I think the dating and marriage thing is still a little bit different out there than it is here.
Yeah.
Like, of my friends here in New England and New York and stuff like that, I'm one of my first friends to get engaged. I only have one married friend and the rest of my friends, some of them are in long-term relationships, some of them are single, but like really nobody is married. Mm. And I'm in my late 20s and I have many friends in their 30s, like no one's married. And then my Midwestern friends are still dating the people they were dating in college, are getting engaged, getting married. And again, they're all great couples and great relationships. And I'm not saying one is...
better.
Right, or one is better, totally. But when it comes to our friends in the Midwest, like, we're pretty middle of the pack. Like, well, some of our friends are engaged and married, some aren't, but they're in long-term relationships.
Sure.
And I, you know, my boyfriend's, well, I'm sorry, my fiancé.
Still getting used to that.
Still getting used to that. I call him my boyfriend all the time. his sister grew up in the Midwest, and all of her friends from high school and college are getting married and having babies and doing all of that. And she is in a long-term relationship, and it's great. But she was like, why am I exactly where I'm supposed to be and yet also feeling so behind? And I'm like, you have to widen your scope a little bit. Like, you are from an area of the country where people are still getting married earlier. And again, this is a big generalization I'm making. It could just be my group of friends. But
that's okay. I think that we're just talking from our own perspectives.
Right. Yeah. Big generalizations here. If you're from the Midwest and you're single and all your friends are single, like, please don't DM me. Like, it's okay. Like, I understand.
Don't cancel me.
Like, please. Like, I understand there are exceptions. It's fine. If you live in New York and you got married at 19, awesome.
Yeah.
But she was saying, she was like, I don't, like, in my own brain, I don't feel behind. But the group of people that I'm around all the time, I feel slightly behind. And I'm like, you have to widen your scope a little bit here.
Totally.
She moved from the Midwest to Denver, which I would say is more compatible with, like, a New York dating scene. Obviously, very different cities, but people are staying single longer. People are, you know, Denver is a city of transplants. People are moving there to have a couple really fun years in Denver and have all these adventures. And then some of them move somewhere else. So. Yeah. I was like, you have to kind of realize that things are different in different parts of the country, and all your Denver friends are single. So it's about perspective.
No, it really is. And I think that what Sex and the City did so well was it offered that perspective to the flyover states, to the Midwest, of people who were in that position.
These crazy women, single in their 30s, having sex like men.
But it kind of, I think that that's what I wasn't, you know, I was 7 years old when the show started airing.
Yeah.
So I can only look backwards. I can't, like, sit in it and be like, oh, in 1998, this is what was happening, because I was literally a child. But I have to imagine that that was very off color for what the zeitgeist of just the general society was asking of women, was to be married, to be settling down, having babies in their mid-20s, definitely by their early 30s, which is why these women feel like such enigmas.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
That brings us to the question that they ask of, is it a Cold War, or are married people just trying to figure out single people? Which I thought was an interesting question, because every married person was once a single person. What is there to figure out? You know what I mean? It's like, you were single and then you met your husband and now you're not single and you're married. Like, that's what she's doing. And I think someone like Samantha is maybe more confusing, because she clearly really loves being single. She's not looking for a boyfriend. She's not, with the times in the show that we see Samantha in a relationship, she's very resistant in almost all of them to get into a relationship. She's like,
oh, yeah. Especially as the show keeps going. Yeah. She is very resistant. So when she does find herself in relationships, like with Richard or James, or even then when she ends up with Smith Jared, she's so very confused. She's like, what am I doing? She's so resistant to it.
Yes. And I think a single woman like Charlotte, I feel like in the context of this episode, is not hard for people to figure out. She's them 3 years ago. Like, she's looking to get married, just whatever. I feel like someone like Samantha or even a Carrie, like, those are more confusing, quote, to her married friends, because they enjoy being single. I feel like a lot of women or the way the show depicts women in the 90s. Again, we weren't there. But
we were. Just
we were.
Not.
We were like watching Disney Channel, though, not Sex and the City. But I feel like the way that the show and many shows from this time period kind of depict women of like, they're all desperate to get married. They want their husbands. They want like, but, and someone like Samantha, who is simply not interested in that.
Yeah.
Is, quote, confusing to people.
Yeah. Do you feel like that's still true today?
A bit. I think it's come a long way.
Yeah.
I think people staying single longer has become more accepted. I think the one that people still struggle with is the people who choose to not have kids.
Yes.
Because I know many couples that are either married or in long-term relationships, live together, whatever, who do not want children. Mm-hmm. They've never wanted children. And something that bothers, I think, them and also anybody is that the question of like when you get married, the immediate question is, well, when are you gonna have kids?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, first of all, what if I don't want to?
Yeah.
I like my dog. Second of all,
like, straight up,
he's hard enough for me to take care of.
Yeah.
Second of all, if like there's, and I think people have gotten a lot better about it.
Yeah.
You know, people struggle to have kids. People like you never know what
someone's
a couple is dealing with.
Yeah.
Or maybe they just don't fucking want them.
Yeah. And that should be okay.
In this economy?
Yes.
A baby?
Are you kidding?
My dog is killing me in this economy.
Correct.
Can you even have a kid?
I want to put a pin in that because later in the season, and I want you to come back for that episode, there is a conversation about when Lainey comes back.
Oh,
and
she's
having a baby and she's struggling. I want to put a pin in that, this conversation, to save it for that, because I completely agree with you and I have thoughts and feelings. But
so we'll scrap all the section and then we'll just throw it in that one.
We're just going to lift it out and just plop it right in. But no, I agree with you. I think that it's becoming more common for people to accept people being single longer. And I think that leaning into the whole like, oh, the divorce rate is so high, is kind of the reason why people are choosing to either stay in their relationships longer, live with each other before they get married, which I know when I was growing up, my mom was like, no, you get married and then you move in together. And I remember even probably at the age that this show was airing, when I'm watching Disney Channel, I'm like, what are you talking about? I got to live with this person. I have to live with this person to know how they operate before I choose to spend the rest of my life with them. And I think that because those things are becoming more societally acceptable, I think that the idea of staying single longer is becoming more accepted by society. So my question for you, and I think I definitely know the answer to this, but I think that I'm just going to pose it anyway. As someone who's in a relationship, who's engaged, do you look at your single friends any differently?
No. Oh my God, no.
Did you feel like when you were single that any of your friends who were in relationships or married looked at you differently?
So yes, I've had instances in which I felt very single.
Yeah.
But being single was never particularly a thing that upset me. You know,
yeah, like totally.
Sometimes, I mean, when I was single and I would go out with my couple-y friends, I was like, oh my God, I am the seventh wheel or I am the whatever.
Sure.
But like,
yeah.
I don't know. I very much enjoyed my time when I was single. I love my fiance. I love our relationship and it's amazing. But I also really loved being single.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
I loved that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, of course, on things like Valentine's Day or whatever. And I've also always loved Valentine's Day, even when I was single. But on days like that, it's easy to be like, oh, well, sure wish I was spending it with someone instead of watching the movie Valentine's Day on my couch.
Right. Of course.
But
yeah.
I've had friends that have made me feel very single. But I think the friends that I am the closest to have never made me feel bad about that.
Totally.
You know, and I would hope that as someone who's been in a long-term relationship, I would hope I never make my friends feel that way, because that's certainly not the way that I
operate.
Ever view them, you know?
Yeah, of course. I think that that was so much more common in the late 90s.
Yes.
But I will say, I rarely have felt like the single friend. And I mean, the thing is that in truth, I'm only 32. I've been with my boyfriend for 2 years. So most of my 30s, I've been in a relationship. But I felt it more in my 20s.
Yeah.
And specifically when I felt it are two times that I can recall. When I would be with my friends who were in relationships, and I was, you know, I was kind of a serial monogamist when I was in my 20s. I was always like on and off with different people.
Oh, a situationship? I was queen of a situationship.
I was the queen of a situationship in my 20s. But even then, I would get asked all the time, like, do you ever want to get married? And I was just like, why are you asking me that? Because I'm single? I'm 26. What do you mean? Do I ever want to get married? Maybe. But is the fact that I'm single at 26, does that automatically mean that I might not want to get married?
Well,
you know?
I think it's also interesting. I've never been asked a question like that by someone my own age.
Yes.
It's always from people older.
Yes.
And I think it's, you know, like our mom's generation is Sex and the City generation. Like they are the same age as, relatively, as the same age as like a lot of the characters on the show. And I think, or they fall under the same generation as a lot of the characters
on the show. I
was
going to say, I think my mom was probably about 10 years older than them. Yeah.
But it, I think, you know, my friends that were in long-term relationships and stuff, they never asked me if I wanted to get married. It's like relatives, like, well, do you ever want to get married? And I'm like, what is the objective of getting an answer to that question? Like, what if you ask someone if they want to get married and they're like, yes, desperately, I really want to meet someone. Do you know anyone? Like, what do you hope to achieve from asking the question?
It was always a very odd question. I never understood what the context was behind it.
Yeah.
And some people have asked me that question in a very, like, general, you know, like, hey, do you think you'll ever want to get married someday? Like, non-judgmental.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also all about not the personality, but when it's your friends and you know them. I mean, no one's asking Samantha that question.
Right.
Because the vibe she's putting out is that she does not want to. And so nobody broaches the question. It's like they're almost asking people who they know want it. They just want to hear, like, they just want to hear them say it, you know? Like,
which was so interesting.
And I also think that the whole general question of the Cold War between marrieds and singles or whatever and women viewing women as competition, I think that is one of the things that has changed a little bit since 1998. I feel like it used to be kind of a race, right? Like, you don't want to be the last of your friends to get married. Like, you don't want to be the, like, the poor single one left. And so I think that was, I think, part of the mentality of creating the war.
Yeah.
I don't think that really, I mean, if your friends make you feel that way, you don't have the right friends.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, I mean, I never once was like, oh, thank God I got into a relationship before some of my friends. Like, I can't be the last one. Like,
yeah, but people do feel that way. I think that that's still, it also kind of depends, again, on what kind of, like, friendships you have with people.
Yes.
I think the only other time that I ever felt that way, that I ever felt like, oh, wow, I am being, for lack of a better term, singled out, was at weddings.
Yeah, that's hard.
And I'm really curious on your thoughts about this. So I was in two weddings a couple years ago for two friends who were, like, and still are, like, cherished friends that I've had since I was very young.
Yeah.
I was in both of their wedding parties back to back. It was, like,
okay,
a few months apart, meaning I bought the dress, I went on the trips. Scheduling wise, you know what I do. I work on Broadway. And so taking a weekend off from work, I lose half my paycheck when I do that. So I was losing money. I was spending money. I was showing up. I was being there. I was doing everything I could.
Yeah.
And I was not given a plus one to either
of their wedding.
No. In fact, the second one, in my save the date, I was addressed as Tara Llewellyn and guest. And in my invitation, it was taken away from me. And I remember telling my friend that the person I was going to take, who I hope to have on this podcast, is my best friend, Gerardo.
Yeah.
Gerardo's like my Stanford. Gerardo and I have been friends for 10 years. He's the most consistent relationship I've ever been in.
And you've taken him to weddings before.
All the time.
Yeah.
He is like my non-romantic life partner.
Yeah.
He is a person who has been in my life for so long. And it was so fascinating to me that me kind of presenting that and being like, hey, he took off of work. I thought I had this plus one. And she was like, no, sorry. And it's like that person, just because I'm not like sleeping with him, just because he's not my romantic partner, he's been a constant in my life. All of a sudden, he's not valid enough for me to bring to a wedding, and I'm not valid enough to have a plus one because I'm not in a relationship. And I know you're planning, well, I don't even know if you're planning a wedding yet.
Oh, I am. No, it's an interesting conversation.
Because I understand the concept of like, you know, we don't want like strangers at our wedding kind of a thing. And like, you know, if you're, you know, just bringing kind of a random person, I understand that. But also it was like, I literally shelled out so much money to be a part of your day. And I signed up for that. I totally did. And that's not why I did it. Like, I didn't, I showed up because you're my friend and I care about you. And you asked me to do this.
Yeah.
However, I shelled out so much time, money, etc., to be a part of your day. And you couldn't even give me a plus one.
It's an interesting conversation. So my rule, this is, okay, again, if you disagree with this, like, that's fine. We can all have different opinions, but please, my mentality on plus ones is it's a kind of case-by-case basis in the sense of, like, if we're inviting someone who's, I know they have been in a long-term relationship, even if I have never met that person, whatever, they're coming to the wedding.
Sure.
At my bridal party, all of them happen to be in relationships, but even if they weren't, a wedding party automatically plus one. Like, for the reason that you just said, like, you're shelling out a lot of money to be here. You're a part of our day. Like, plus one no matter what if you're in the wedding party. where it gets a little bit case by case for me is like single friends that I went to college with. And they're not in the party. They're just coming to the wedding and whatever. And I know that they're going to be in a room of 25 of their friends from college.
Mm.
In that instance, I probably would not give a plus one because I'm like, I'm not going to know the person they bring. They're going to be in a room with all their friends anyway.
Sure. And I've been to weddings like that. When I went to Carly and Matt's wedding.
Yes.
I was a bridesmaid and they asked me if I wanted a plus one. And I said no.
Right. Because you knew everybody was going to be there.
Yes. 100%. And one of the girls whose wedding I was in who didn't give me a plus one, I asked her and she said, well, I invited your parents. Your parents are going to be there. And then my parents didn't end up coming. And I said, well, actually, my parents can't come. And she was like, oh, no. So give me a plus one. I was like, what?
Yeah.
And I didn't really know a lot of the people there. I didn't. And that's what makes you feel kind of alone. But in an instance where you have a ton of your friends there and you as the bride know that as the person planning this entire event. Also, of course, it's about you.
Yeah.
But you want to make sure that the people who are invited aren't going to be like sitting at a table alone.
Well, kind of so like, that's where the kind of the case by case part comes in. If I'm inviting a childhood friend who is going to know nobody else there, even if they don't have a partner or they don't whatever, I'm giving that person a plus one because I don't want them to be sitting alone and awkward at my wedding because they don't know anybody.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of where it becomes case by case. And I understand that in a perfect world, you would give everybody a plus one and whatever. But, you know, weddings are fucking expensive.
Oh, my God. They're expensive.
And so I feel like with our guest list, I try to be mindful of relationships that I know are long term, even if I don't know the partner, I don't whatever. You know, am I going to give all my close friends? Because then it's like I've been invited to weddings where I got a plus one. And I didn't end up bringing my partner because I was like, he's not going to know anybody there. It's a room of my college friends. I'm going to want to be hanging out with them and reminiscing and having fun and drinking and dancing. And like, he's not going to know anybody.
Totally.
So
totally.
Why am I going to make him fly to this wedding and do this whole thing? And
yeah.
So I've opted not to use my plus one before. So I think
me too.
It's kind of case by case on the wedding and the couple and how well you know them and how well you know everybody else in their life and all of that.
Totally.
But wedding party, 100%, no matter what, always plus one.
Thank you. I felt very, I was very sad and I felt like I was in the wrong because I was like, yeah, I get it. It's your day and you're spending the money. But also like the amount of money that I invested into your wedding, I should have a whole table to myself. Like,
well, so when my sister got married, I was single and I was the only bridesmaid that was single. And she still gave me a plus one because she was like, no, you're in the wedding party. And I just brought my friend Jake. So
I remember.
Yeah. And we had a great time. Like, and he was a good choice of person to take because he already knew my whole family. And he knew a lot of people that were going to be at the wedding because he's my friend.
But totally.
Yes. She was like, yeah, you're in my bridal party. Of course. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
That friend will listen to this podcast.
I really hope not.
Love you.
No, I still cherish those people. Like, I don't hold it against them, but it definitely stung. I won't lie. It stung because it made me feel like I was less deserving of a date because I was single. And it's like, no, I have a person in my life who, even though, like I said, they're not my romantic partner, they are a soulmate in a lot of ways. And I couldn't bring them because I'm not sleeping with them.
Yeah.
Should I go sleep with them? Will that make you feel better?
Well, that's like with couples that opt to not have children. You know, those couples sometimes refer to themselves as a family, as they should. They're family. They're a partnership. But if they don't have kids, people tend to describe them as a couple, not a family.
Sure.
You know? And I think it's just an interesting dynamic of it's like, oh, well, are we less of each other's family because we didn't procreate? Like, it doesn't, like...
And it's all societal norms that, like, someone said a really long time ago, and we've all just kind of been living up to them. But I think that this show breaks the mold on that a lot and kind of, like, punches through the glass ceiling. And I love it. That's one of the reasons why I love this show is because even though I don't necessarily think this question of, you know, is there a cold war between marrieds and singles is necessarily applicable to 2024 because I don't
feel that way.
Yeah. And we also did this poll on Instagram and many people said, I think there once was, but I don't think there is anymore. There's so much about this show that is still so relatable.
Yes.
And even just the content of the episode itself is still applicable to, you know, situations we find ourselves in today. Because I dated a guy very, very similar to Sean.
Yeah.
He was a nice guy, but I could just tell that he just wanted a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I want to be wanted by someone because of who I am, not just because you are desperate for a partner.
Yeah.
And that was what really turned me off about this guy, Sean, is that, like, definitely these were not the same guys, but they were similar in that they just wanted someone. And it actually changed my dating that person, because I dated him in my late 20s, changed my perspective on dating as a whole. Because I wouldn't say I was desperate for that, but like many people that we've talked about in this conversation, like in my 20s, I was like, oh, wow, like I will feel so much more fulfilled when I get married to somebody because I will feel complete. That was still ingrained in me even in my 20s. Yeah. But once I started dating this guy and I just saw that he just wanted someone, not necessarily me, just someone, I was like, oh no, I can't wait to be with like the right person.
That's what I was trying to hit on earlier when I was saying, when people say, I can't wait to be married, I can't wait to whatever. I think what they're feeling is they can't wait. God, I can't imagine feeling whole marrying just anybody. Like, yeah, that would actually feel extremely isolating if you just married someone for the sake of marrying them. And also, why would I want just any dude living in my house?
I know. Well, we feel that way now, but, like, yeah, 50 years ago, that was exactly what was happening.
Like, I love my partner so incredibly much, and if I loved him any less than I love him, I would not want to live with a boy.
I know.
Why would I pick any old boy to live with?
Like, yeah. Now we're in that mentality.
Yeah.
But I think, like, years ago, and even maybe as recently as 1998, because even though it was 25 years ago, it's still not that long ago.
No.
But I think that that mentality was still kind of brewing. And I think this show and many other just like changes in our societal norms and just kind of being more progressive have led us down a path of understanding that like being married is not the be all end all. What does it change about who you are as a person?
Well, in theory, it shouldn't. And the conversation that gets posed by those like talking head couples that are still breaking the third wall or whatever, like we're on The Office, when she's like, I became we and blah, 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 blah. And what the tropes about what happens to people when they get married.
Yeah.
I think that's also very different. I think, I mean, at least in my relationship, and I can only speak from my own experience. And also, I do think part of what plays into this dynamic between my fiance and I is that we were long distance for a long time. So even though we were in a committed, serious relationship, we kind of had the lives of single people because we didn't live with each other. We didn't see each other often. So we got to be with our friends all the time. We got to go out with our friends and do all those things. And
sure,
we're still very autonomous. As much time as we spend together because we live together and we genuinely love hanging out with each other. If I'm going to dinner with a girlfriend, he's not coming.
No. Oh, my God.
Even if that girlfriend has a partner, we establish like, oh, are they coming or no? Like, it's not assumed that just because we are friends and we are both in couples that this is a double date, couples dinner. Like, we both really value our time with our friends that does not include each other.
Yeah, totally.
And we love each other's friends. We get along great with each other's friends.
Sure, but you don't always need to be there. How are you going to continue to foster and like service the relationships that you currently have established and like feed them if you're constantly bringing your partner along?
Yeah,
you have to be able to foster those connections on your own.
And that's like they were saying at the end of the episode, like, but nothing's better than a night at the movies with your girlfriends. Like, so true. Why would I want to bring Ben to girls' night? Yeah. Why do we want to bring boys to girls' night? Like, no. That's not what it's for. No. Also, when I speak in these very cisgendered terms, that they're just blanket statements.
Yeah. Like, just speaking from our own experience, because we're both heterosexual and cisgendered
women.
Yes, exactly. Yes. But no matter what the circumstances or how you identify or what kind of partnership you're in, yes, I think it's all applicable. I mean, trust me, I love Brett, my partner, and I always want him around. But there are definitely times when it's just like, no, I'm here with my friends. And it's interesting. Last night, I went out to celebrate my 10-year anniversary with New York. And
I had
Brett with me, but I also had some friends with me. And I asked them the same question because all three of my friends who were there were all single. Not that I ever like view them that way. I view them as my friends. But, you know, I told them what we were doing today in recording this episode. And it was so interesting to me that I posed that question to the two of them. They haven't seen Sex and the City. They've seen like bits and pieces, or like one of them seen the movie kind of a thing. But when I asked both of them how they felt about it, I was like, do you feel like there's kind of a cold war between marrieds and singles in 2024? One of them emphatically answered yes.
Interesting.
Yes. And I wrote down some of what they said because I knew I was probably going to forget.
Yeah.
And they said that they do feel like their married friends inevitably treat you differently, and not in a way where it's like a criticism, but they say like inevitably you're going to be treated differently as a single friend because their priorities are changing. like, yes, I becomes we, but in the sense that, like, they now have another person in their life to prioritize.
Right.
So that I completely understand. And I felt that way when I was starting to date Brett. You know, leading up to my relationship with Brett, there was a lot of unknown between the two of us. And I leaned on my friends a lot during that time.
Yeah.
And I was trying to be very conscious of the fact, like, when we did get together, that I didn't lose those relationships or just, like, push them to the side to only make time for Brett. Because, of course, you're in that honeymoon phase. You're excited about being together. So you're inevitably going to be spending more time together. But as a whole, as you continue to move through life and that honeymoon phase maybe dies down a little bit, you also just in general are splitting your time that you once had for several other people in your life. Like you've added one more person into the fold and you're trying to really like connect with them and build a foundation with them and continue to foster that connection. You want to make sure that you're splitting your time evenly while also like serving all different relationships, including yourself.
I think the one kind of point that I maybe say that I feel a difference between myself and my single friends in neither a positive or a negative way, but just a way that I feel it is like when me and my girlfriends were all single, we would like go to loud bars and we would like, we would go dance and drink and flirt and make out with boys and do all those types of things. And as you know, you should in your early 20s, if that's what you want to do. But as more of us started to get into relationships, that's not really an environment that seems as appealing anymore. Not that I don't want to drink with my friends or party and have fun, but like a bar where the objective is flirting with someone and meeting someone and like it's fun, but I'm like, it feels like a weird environment. And maybe that's a problem within myself. I don't feel like I'm doing anything wrong by being there. And like Ben doesn't care if I go, you know, it's fine.
Well, but
like,
yeah, you guys have trust.
But it just feels like I'm out of place in those types of environments now.
Totally.
Because what is someone going to do? Come up and offer to buy me a drink and then I have to be like, I'm engaged. Like, or I have a boyfriend. Like, versus my friends that are still single, like, they still love to do those things. And I just feel, and it's more on me than it is on them.
Like, totally.
I just feel weirdly out of place now.
Sure. Well, I think it also depends on the objective of the people around you. Because if your friends are going out with the intention of, like,
hooking up
with people, of course, you're going to be like, well, now I feel like the third wheel.
Right. I'm like, should I leave you guys alone?
Exactly. But with, you know, oftentimes I feel like in Sex and the City, we see this happen where the four of them just want to go out and have a good time with themselves. And sometimes they'll even be like, no, we're just here to hang out with each other. Sorry. And if that's the objective of everyone involved, great. Of course you feel very in place there because that's your only objective.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the reverse of going out to a couple's dinner and you feel like, you know, the seventh wheel. You know, if you as the person who is in a relationship are going out with a ton of your single friends who, where their objective is to couple up and your couple is not there, you are like, well, okay, I am on a life raft by myself.
Then I'm like, I'm going to go eat the pizza.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'll catch you guys in the Uber after.
Exactly. So I understand that. I understand that sentiment. The other thing that they said was that they feel that there's a lot of pressure put on single friends because the expectation to be there no matter what still exists. So like if their friend is in a relationship and they're caught up in it, right, and they start to spend a lot of time with that person, the single friend is always going to be there for them, even if that relationship falls apart. So they're like, there's a lot of pressure for you to stay the same while their dynamic with you and their dynamic with another person shifts. And I was like, interesting.
Yes.
A very interesting perspective to offer.
Because then it's like, not me specifically, I hope I haven't put friends in this position, but I think the mentality of like being in a relationship, you're expecting your single friend to be the constant. They're going to stay the same. They're going to be single. What happens when that friend gets into a relationship and you need them, but now they're coupled up, they're giving their time to somebody else in a way that, like you said, you know, with part of being in a relationship, it all sounds fine and good to say like, when I get into a relationship, my friendships won't change. They will. Like they were saying, you have to make room for this new person in your life, even if you do it in a very balanced way.
Yeah.
That is still a significant chunk of time that you maybe would have spent with your single girlfriends before, but you got to give them something. You got to hang out at some point.
So totally. Like,
and I think, you know, when you have that single friend that's your constant or your whatever, and then they couple off and then maybe your relationship fizzles out or doesn't work or whatever, and then you're the single friend, it feels, I imagine, if you've put your friends in that position to begin with, to not grow and to stay the same and to whatever, that probably feels pretty isolating when it flips.
Yes, totally. Totally. So I think that it kind of brings us to the answer of no, I don't think there's a cold war necessarily between marrieds and singles in the same way that there maybe once was in the year 1998. But I do think that there are still just inevitable differences.
Yes.
Between being single and being in a relationship when it comes to maintaining your friendships with people, whether they're single or they're not.
Yeah. And I think also a big part of this conversation, but I think we're going to touch on it later in the season with the baby shower, is I think the pressure, you know, if you choose, if you want to be a mother and you want to conceive those children yourself, it's fucked up, but there is more of a timeline on women. Like it just is the way that biology works. And so I think the timeline is partly societal. And I also think women, it's so fucked up that men can like have a kid until they're dead. And like women are like, if I have a kid past age 35, like, I don't know what's going to go on. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But I do think that contribute, like we see that with Charlotte a lot in the series. Like part of the reason she feels so pressured to get married has less to do with getting married and more to do with the fact that she wants to be a mom so bad.
Totally.
And that's a very valid concern that isn't purely societal. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think you can become a parent at any age. Like, I'm not saying they're right. You can only have babies in your 30s. Like, that's not what I'm saying. But I think, you know, biologically, there is more of a timeline on women than there is on men. And if you want to have children, it's something to consider when you're moving through the timeline of your relationship.
Sure.
Yeah. And I think we'll get more into that later in the season.
I was going to say, we'll definitely put a pin in that conversation for the next
time. It's definitely part of the marriage conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But thank you for sharing your insight. One of the reasons I chose you for this episode is because I do feel like you are the kind of person who has a very balanced life with their friendships and their relationship. Like, I do feel like you really value all of your friendships and you try to maintain them as well as you possibly can, no matter your relationship status. So it just so happened that you ended up getting engaged before we recorded this episode. And I was like, perfect.
I was just thinking, I was like, I hope that people listening don't think I'm just being an arrogant ass by being like, I would never do any of these things. But if I did.
No.
I try very hard to be balanced. But of course, like, I've been victim to some of the, you know, like, my first relationship in college, I ignored everybody to hang out with my boyfriend. Like, we've all been there. We've all done it.
Sure.
I think, ideally, you just learn from earlier relationships and then you apply that to later relationships.
Exactly. There's so much to unpack in this season, so we'll definitely have to have you back. I definitely want to have you back for the conversation about babies and motherhood.
I think Ellen might also be an interesting one for that,
though. She totally would be, because she actually has a baby. I mean, yeah. We have children, but they're made of fur.
Yeah. The better kind. My dog doesn't talk back. He just likes me.
But don't worry. Kayla will be back.
Sure will. Can't get away from me.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.